also teaching at the Electron Institute in Dundee.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Safa and others, and thanks for having me here. So, the title of my talk is in question format, question form, can atheists pray to God? So, a philosophical appraisal. Of course, one might treat this question from different perspective, from exegetical perspective, from New Testament perspective, from the Quranic perspective. Mine here is only from a purely philosophical perspective, regardless of whether you come from any religious background or any doctrinal background. That discussion, which is philosophical, might make sense to you. So I'm going to address this question, and of course my response would be that yes, atheists can pray to God. And there are some philosophers who would say that they should pray to God. Well, initially that was the title, that can or should atheists pray to God. And then I tried to come up with a more minimal claim. So my claim is not that they should pray to God. They might or might not. That's for another discussion. But here my claim is that at least atheists can pray to God. So first I'm going to discuss a little bit about the significance of this claim. Why is it important to think about the possibility of atheistic prayer to God? And then I'm going to discuss I'm going to clarify the main claim, which is that atheists can pray to God. And then I'm going to present two arguments in favor of this claim, and conclusion and summary. So, why this claim is important? So I think at least there are three reasons why this claim is very important. Initially, it seems counterintuitive, because initially it seems to be the case that only those who believe in God can pray to God. I mean, like, it's like saying that, okay, if you want to borrow money from your friend shouldn't be imaginary, shouldn't be out there. Of course, have money, but it should be out there. So it's exactly like that. If you do not believe in God, then praying to God seems impossible. So to take a counterintuitive position saying that no, atheists can pray to God seems philosophically very interesting. So this is significance number one. And the second significance of this claim is that that claim can open a new way of dialogue between theists and atheists. Why is that so? I think the genuine dialogue between two groups, especially when their differences are very deep, like theists and atheists, the genuine dialogue between these two groups is to engage in the form of life of the other group before passing any judgment, or at least during passing the judgment. So if you are, for example, let me say that if you are homosexual and you think those who are homophobic, I mean, you should have a kind of sympathy with them, and other way around. If you think that is backward, that is corrupted, quote unquote, of course, that kind of homosexual lifestyle, then if you truly want to have a better understanding of homosexuals, you have to have a kind of understanding, close face-to-face understanding of their lifestyle before passing any judgments. And the same can be said about theist and atheist dialogue. And as I said, especially after the rise of the so-called neo-atheism. Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, stuff like that. We have a new round of misunderstanding between theists and atheists. How to overcome that? I think one way is to engage in the other side's form of life. If you are theist, so better have a better understanding of atheistic form of life. If you're atheist, it's better to have a better understanding of theistic form of life. How so? I think that atheistic prayer, if possible and desirable, which I think it is, could open the way to mutual understanding or better understanding. And we really need it, especially after the rise of far right and populism in Europe and Donald Trump in America and Middle East, you know. So we need a better way to get engaged in a dialogue between theism and atheism, between theists and atheists. Kind of mutual understanding. And that atheistic prayer is one way towards that goal, that widely ignored and widely misunderstood kind of dialogue. That is the second significance of atheistic prayer to God. And the third one, which I think it's also very interesting. Okay, let me put it this way. To whom is this discussion addressed? You might say, okay, we come from a theistic background. We are Christian, Muslim, Jew, Baha'i, the Hindu, one branch of Hindus are, by the way, theistic. And, or Buddhist, I mean, whether Buddhism is a theistic religion or not, that's a matter of debate, by the way. So, we are not atheists, if you are not. So, that's not our concern. That discussion is not addressed to us. I think, no, it is not. So, even theists could be the addressee of this discussion. How and why? Because theists could have an atheistic moment or period in their life. One classical example could be, there are a lot of examples of that. A lot. But one example, maybe one of the best, is that when Jesus on the cross, based on Mark and Matthew, said, I mean, it depends whether you translate it from Aramaic or Hebrew, but Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? It might be taken as an atheistic moment. So, theists are not free from atheistic moments, if not periods. So the question is, if I'm going to reformulate the question, can theists in atheistic moment or period of their life, pray to God? Put it in this way, then that atheistic prayer is not only the concern of atheist or agnostic. It could also be the concern for theist. There are a lot of other examples of atheistic moment. There is an Iranian 7th century, 7 AD, which becomes 13th century common era. A.H., sorry, 7th century A.H., 13th or 14th century Common Era, called Ayn al-Ghazal Hamadani. Quite similar to Jesus, he was executed when he was 33, I guess, or so. So, he has a very, he has a number, he was a genius. He was jurist, mystic, and philosopher. Not very famous, by the way. Ainul Ghazal Hamadani. In one of his books is that he says that unbelief, kufr in Arabic and Persian both, is not separable from faith. So if you have a faith, you also have unbelief. So faith and unbelief are not separable. They are inseparable. Therefore, in the moment of unbelief, even believer can ask him or herself this question that, can I pray to God? So in T1, I'm atheist, let's suppose. In T2, I'm theist. In T1, can I pray to God? So this is the third significance of this discussion. That this discussion is not about atheists or those who consider themselves as atheists. Even for those who consider themselves as a theist, that discussion can be discussed and can be raised. Okay? So this is the significant number three. Okay, after, I hope, showing the significance of this actually question, so now let me clarify the claim. So the claim in a short format, as I put it here, is atheists can pray to God. What does atheism mean? What does can mean? What does pray mean? What does God mean? So all the main components of this claim should be fleshed out, should be explained in a more detailed way. So the first one, two meanings of atheism, broad meaning and narrow meaning. In the narrow meaning of the term, agnostics, in narrow, agnostics are not atheists. In the narrow meaning of the term. Because atheism means the denial of theism, atheism. While agnostics, they do not deny the existence of God. They only do not endorse it. So in the narrow meaning of atheism, agnostics are not atheists. So Bertrand Russell, in the strict meaning of the term, in the narrow meaning of the term, was not atheist, rather he was agnostic. Okay, Bertrand Russell, you know that he was also politically very active, and he was imprisoned for a number of time. And one time that he was imprisoned because of his political activities, the officer asked him, "What is your religious conviction?" Maybe I don't know. Back in 1940 or 1950, there might be just like race. There might be something in the application form. And Russell said that I'm agnostic. And that officer was not able to write down agnostic. So we usually tend to put agnosticism and atheism in one actually category. But strictly speaking, they are not. Because atheists, they would say, atheists reject the existence of God. Agnostic, they do not. They only say that we neither have reason to believe in God nor to disbelieve in God. That is agnosticism. So agnosticism is something between theism and atheism in this narrow sense. But in the broad sense of the term, atheism means both agnostics and atheists. Here, the broad meaning of atheism is meant. Means atheism, atheist, in the narrow meaning of the term, and agnostics. So, clarification number one. So, now I know what atheist means. What about prayer? There are two meanings of prayer relevant to our discussion. There are a lot of ways to divide prayer. But one which is closely related to our discussion is this. We have a ritual prayer, 5 times a day, in a Muslim way. And by the way, that 5 times a day in Muslim way, in Shi'i way, it is 3 times a day. In Twilver Shi'itim, it is 3 times a day. In Ismaili Shi'ism, it's 2 times a day. So that 5 times a day is the kind of typical way, but it's not complete and accurate way of putting it. But anyway, so 5 days or 3 days or two times a day, sorry, 2 times a day or 5 times a day, 3 times a day, or I don't know, I mean, maybe 1 time a day, that is, for example, praying or salat in Muslim context. Then we have, of course, I don't know, I mean, the Christian way of ritual prayer, and then the Jewish way, and the Baha'i way, and the Hindu way, and the Taoist way, and Confucian. I don't know, do Confucians have praying, ritual prayer? Confucianism? I don't know, I don't think so. So, and the Taoism and different religions have a different way, different ritualistic forms of prayer. And as I said, even within a religion, there are different ways of praying, depending on the denomination. Okay? That is ritual prayer, which is different from petitionary prayer. Petitionary prayer is when you call on God, when you want something from God, which might be in the form of ritual or might not. Put it another way, ritual prayer could come with petitionary prayer or could come just as a ritual. You may say your prayer, but you do not ask God for something. In that case, you have ritual prayer without petitionary prayer. And the other way around, you may ask God for something, but you do it in your own way, without doing it in any kind of ritualistic way, personal ritualistic or collective ritualistic. So these two kinds of prayer should not be conflated. So ritual prayer and petitionary prayer. Going back to our main claim, are we talking about atheists being able to get engaged in ritual prayer or petitionary prayer or both? The answer is that my main concern here in the claim that atheists can pray to God is petitionary prayer. I mean, ritual prayer, it's something official. You can go to mosque and pray with others, even if you're an atheist. But the more interesting question is, can you ask God for something? Can you call on God if you're atheist? That is a more philosophically interesting question. So we are concerned with petitionary prayer rather than ritual prayer. Okay? God. So what do we mean by God here? Okay, there are two kinds of understanding God by and large, not only in the so-called Abrahamic religion, but altogether. Personalistic, personal God, or impersonal God. And interestingly enough, even within each and every religion, there are two kinds of understanding God. Personalistic and impersonalistic. For example, let me talk about Islam, with which I'm a little bit more familiar. Among jurists, fuqaha, the God of jurists, the legalistic God, is more personal God. It's like a father, strict or otherwise. Although the father analogy is almost absent from Islamic thinking. It's a Christian. Almost. I'm saying almost because we have a Rumi, the Persian poet and mystic, who has used that metaphor of father for God, which is Christian. But I'm not saying that using the metaphor of father, but the figure of father. The figure of father is already there in Islam and Christianity and Judaism. And the the monotheistic branch of Hinduism. Buddhism is different. The Taoism, matter of debate. But always there has been an impersonalistic understanding of God. So how to make a difference between personalistic and impersonalistic? I mean, that metaphor of father would help us, or person. So impersonal God seems like an energy. This is like an error, which is everywhere. But it doesn't have kind of distinction. Doesn't have a kind of consciousness, will, stuff like that. But it's still there, everywhere. But personal God, of course, personal God is also taken to be everywhere, but at the same time, in a very paradoxical way, he or she, I mean, there are feminist theologians, that's why I'm saying she, so it's not only a matter of giving concession to feminists, because there are feminist theologians. So he or she is everywhere, but at the same time, God is distinct, has a consciousness, has a will. So, personal and impersonal. But of course, there are some philosophers, I mean, theologians, who would say, as I've just said, that this personalistic model of God and impersonalistic model of God are not mutually exclusive. We can combine them. But of course, there are some who would say, no. You should either take personalistic God or impersonalistic God. So here, if we can combine these two, then no problem. We can combine personalistic understanding of God and impersonalistic. But if these two models of God cannot be combined, for example, in the case of Buddhism, they do not have a God, but they have a situation, nirvana or whatever it might be called, which seems like an impersonal God. But one might say, okay, in Buddhism, personal God is totally absent. Okay. In Abraham, the so-called Abrahamic religion, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, personal God is already there. But sometimes the mystical branch of Abrahamic religions, they tend to take God to be impersonal. For example, in Islam, Ibn Arabi, impersonal God. But at the end, he tried to combine the two models, by the way. But in the core, God is impersonal. God is not a person for Ibn Arabi. Probably the most important theoretical mystics of Islam. In Christianity, Meister Eckhart. In Judaism, not a mystic, but a kind of philosopher which has a kind of mystical tendencies in medieval Judaism, Moses Maimonides. We say Musa ibn Maimun in Arabic. Moses Maimonides. And in contemporary Judaism, Martin Buber. Impersonal God. But at the same time, personal for them. So, if personal and impersonal God cannot be combined, then we are concerned with personal God. Why? Because you are asking for something. And there must be someone who has a consciousness, will, can answer your prayers. Therefore, there must be something or someone who is person. That's why the personhood, divine personhood, is needed as the person to whom our petitionary prayers are addressed. Okay? And if, as I've just said, if that personal model and impersonal model can be combined, can be reconciled, then no problem whatsoever. As I said, Ibn Arabi tried to do that in Islam. In Hindu culture, Shankara tried to do that. medieval, very important a Hindu mystic, Shankara. In Christianity, Meister Eckhart tried to do that. Islam, Ibn Arabi. And in contemporary Judaism, Martin Buber, a very important philosopher and Jewish thinker. Okay, so the claim now is clear. What about the meaning of can? One might say, okay, can is obvious. Come on, I mean, atheism is not, I mean, God is not, even can is not obvious. Because at least we have two meanings of can. Logical possibility, ethical permissibility. When I say, can I steal from a multi-billionaire giving it to poor people? Can here means ethical permissibility. Means, am I morally permissible to do that? Am I morally allowed to do that? That is ethical permissibility. Can in the form of ethical permissibility. Okay? But the other meaning of can is logical possibility. Can we have square circle? Can here means logical possibility. Is it possible to square a circle? Means logically possibility. Which one is meant here in this discussion? Any idea? Can atheists pray to God? Can here means logical possibility or ethical permissibility or both or none? Thank you. Bingo. Yes. Here means both. I'll explain why both. I mean, the logical possibility seems a little bit more obvious probably. In the light of this clarification, now I'm going to reformulate the position I'm about to take. Okay? Atheists, including agnostics, and also, as I said, thieves in the atheistic moments, why have you forsaken me? Period of their life. Can offer petitionary prayer to a personal God or gods. Why have I added God or gods? Because from an atheistic perspective, we still do not know whether we should be take a theistic position or polytheistic position. There might be something out there that help us. Only one God? Two God? Three God? Many gods? You still don't know. So of course, if you are theist, you think there is only one God. But the point is that, can atheist pray to God? An atheist has not taken any position with regard to the oneness or multiplicity of gods out there. That's why we should take a more neutral position, okay, and say God or gods can pray to a personal God or gods without any logical contradiction. The first meaning of can. So, atheistic prayer to God is not like square circle. Square circle is logical contradiction. Okay? But this is the claim, of course. Atheistic prayer is not like square circle, which is logical contradiction. Or losing authenticity. This is an allusion to the second meaning of can. Means ethical permissibility. If you're, what does it mean? It means if you're atheist and you pray, you're not hypocrite. You have not lost your authenticity. Still you could be genuine atheist. That's the claim. So can both logical possibility and ethical or existential permissibility. Okay? So hope by far the claim and its significance is enough clear. Okay. But are we talking about an abstract issue or are we talking about the topic which is already there? Of course, that discussion has an abstract, philosophical aspect to it. But this is not only an abstract concern for a number of ivory tower philosophers that, you know, consider a very, you know, detached from reality kind of discussion. No, it's reality. And by reality mean that atheistic prayer to God has already happened. And that is from Guardian, January 2018 report. According to new survey, 1 in 5 adults pray in Britain, by the way. This is about Britain. But there is also another one about the States. Saying that they are not religious. They consider themselves to be atheists, but still they pray. So this is a sociological fact, despite the fact that there is also a lot of philosophical and theoretical aspect to it. So then the question is that atheistic prayer to God, is it possible and is it desirable? That's the claim. And, okay, has it been represented in movies, atheistic prayer to God? I found one example. Please feel free to help me if you think there are some other examples in movie representation or novels or plays, stuff like that. Could be a take-home exercise. So one is from the marvelous movie. If you have you watched The Grey? Please watch it. It's marvelous. It's a very good movie. So 2011, and by the way, sorry, it has this obscene language. The kid is not here. I was finally there, and my daughter, 7 years, said that, "Daddy, are you gonna please play these to people?" I said, "Okay, yes." Okay, so there is no kid out there. Here, so okay. So yeah, background. After okay, the guy is atheist according to himself in another scene of the movie. Okay, and he in yet another scene of the movie he was. Probably a little bit of a spoiler, sorry. So he tried to take his life, but he was unable to do that. So atheist, according to himself, in another scene of movie, in a dialogue, his lovely wife got cancer and she's about to die. And after a plane accident, plane crash, he's the only survivor. And in that scene, he's surrounded by a bunch of fierce wolves who are about to attack him. And he's getting ready to fight. And that scene, which is taken from The Grey 2011, and by the way, that actor is from Northern Ireland. Despite being atheist, he starts praying to God. Petitionary prayer, not ritual. There's nothing ritual here. Nothing ritual here. Petition, purely petitionary prayer from an atheistic person towards God. Ready? Okay.
Now, not later. Now.
I'll do it myself. Do something. God, do something. I'll do it myself. Okay, so this is, as far as I could find, this is a one atheistic prayer to God. Didn't end well, but still an atheistic prayer to God. Okay, so far I haven't argued in favor of my position. Only showed if successful, I've shown its significance, clarified the position, sociological fact, 1 in 5, a movie presentation. What about arguing in favor of it? Okay, that's what I'm going to do. How much do I have time? Yeah, that's good, I think. Okay, but before that, I should use another fancy words. Sorry, because we need that kind of, you know, intellectual tools or concepts, which enables us to actually treat a very complicated issue in a more convenient way. There is a distinction in not only philosophy of religion, in all branches of philosophy. Ethics, philosophy of science, philosophy of mathematics, philosophy of social sciences and other branches of philosophy, but also in philosophy of religion. There is a division or classification between realistic position, and there is also one in politics, which is irrelevant to here. So realistic, I mean, political realism, or that's irrelevant to this philosophical division. So realism and non-realism, how can I explain it in a non-technical way? I think the analogy of Santa Claus would help me. Okay, when we are kid, we were told that there is someone like Santa Claus, long white beard, bringing gift if you are well behaved on the Christmas Eve, stuff like that. And we tend to believe really that there is someone really out there with that special clothes bringing gift for us. Then when we are very, very young child, we are realist about Santa Claus. And then when we grew older, we realize that there is no someone as Santa Claus. This is symbolic. Still, we continue to live Santa Claus-related form of life. We continue to buy Santa Claus kind of symbols. We bring to make some gift ready for our children, saying that Santa Claus brought this for you. So still, despite the fact that we know that there is no such a person, maybe historically there was Santa Nicholas someone, but now there is no Santa Claus. But still, Santa Claus form of life make perfect sense. Then we are non-realistic about Santa Claus. And the same kind of, actually, discussion can be raised with regard to God. So, one might be non-realist about God, saying that there is no one outside, out there. Still saying that religious form of life is useful. It's full of meaning. Why should I abandon it? There's no substitute for it. Then you are non-realistic in your philosophy of religion. One also could be realist, saying that no, I mean, we are not sure, but there might be someone out there. Then you're realistic. So what's the relevance of this division, this fancy division to our discussion? The relevance is that can a non-realist person pray to God? If you are non-realist, you are atheist, put it another way. But by the way, even a realist could be atheist. Realism is about the nature of religious language. when you are really to say that the concept God is supposed to refer to something independent of the way we think and talk, then you are realist about religious language. Then you might add that there is no one out there. Still you are realist about religious language. So the question is, in religious non-realism, what is central is not belief. It's not whether you believe in God, in the existence of objective God or not. In religious non-realism, what matters is your form of life. Are you participating in synagogue, church, mosque, Mashghul Azkar, which is a Baha'i place of worship, or whatever, then you are religious. Religion has nothing to do with your doctrines or your belief. It has everything to do with your form of life. So from that non-realist, oh, but of course there are a lot of great philosophers who are non-realists. So their theory of, their philosophical theory of religion is non-realistic. From their perspective, then of course atheists can pray to God. But in order to do that, he or she should participate in religious form of life. Through participating in religious form of life, they can pray to God. You know, you remember that a couple of minutes ago I made a division between ritualistic prayer and petitionary prayer. From non-realistic perspective, you cannot make that division. If you want to calling on God, you have to go to the church or mosque or synagogue or Mashghul Azkar or Hindu temple or whatever. So from non-realistic perspective, petitionary prayer is possible, but through ritual prayer only. Through engaging in a religious form of life. Not in a very individualistic way. Okay? That's the position of a non-realistic philosophers. A quotation from D.Z. Phillips. D.Z. Phillips was a English philosopher of religion. He was deeply influenced by Wittgenstein. And Wittgenstein was an Austrian British philosopher, a very great philosopher, whose philosophy was interpreted in a non-realistic way. Wittgenstein and Desert Phillips following him, they say that in religion, I mean, belief is irrelevant. Only your form of life. If your form of life is religious, you are religious. If not, even if you believe in God, you are not religious. So that is, and interestingly enough, Desert Phillips says that if you ask for God for something, and by calling on God, you mean that you want to cause God to do something, which is a typical religious understanding of prayer, this is non-religious understanding of prayer. Okay? If one thinks in terms of causing God to save the child, one is nearer the example of non-religious, from Desert Phillips' perspective, of course. Parents who pray, "Oh God, save our child," were the thought behind the prayer. That prayer, which is a typical, but from Desert Phillips' non-religious kind, is that God could save the child if he wanted to. Put it another way, realistic understanding of prayer is wrong. That we, just like me asking, can you borrow a money? Can I get a money from you? Typical. Prayer is not like that. For Desert Phillips. Prayer is only to cultivate devotion, trust, love, contentment. Not asking someone. God is not someone. I'm talking on behalf of Desert Phillips. Non-realism. Then you can pray. I mean, if you go to church, if you attend a religious ceremony, you can pray. But not in that sense, and not in the really petitionary prayer. Okay, here I cannot argue in favor of non-realism or against realism, or in favor of realism against non-realism. That realism, non-realism debate in philosophy of religion is the hell of debate. But at least I'm not non-realist. I'm not. But I know that defending realism in philosophy of religion is very difficult. But I cannot argue in favor of my position. But I think Desert Flips and the non-realistic interpretation of Wittgenstein is not defensible. But regardless of whether we take non-realism to be defensible philosophically, and there are a number of Christian non-realist philosophers. There is one in Cambridge, now retired, called Don Cupid. Don Cupid. Desert Phillips. The other, Wittgenstein, Ludwig Wittgenstein's philosophy, is widely taken to be non-realistic. So there are a number of Christian non-realists. And of course we have a number of Jewish non-realist philosopher, Mordechai Kaplan, and Reconstructionist Judaism. They are non-realists. They do not say that there is, they say there is no God out there. It doesn't matter. Because religion has nothing to do with outside reality. It's about inside reality. So they are non-realistic. Okay, question. Do we have a non-realist Muslim philosophers? I mean, historically or contemporary? I tried to find one in my PhD thesis. Let me define in my viva is 1 month's time. Let me see what will happen. So I think there are few contemporary Muslim philosophers whose philosophy can be interpreted non-realistic. Okay, but let's put non-realism, which is very interesting and very controversial, aside. Rowan Williams, let me tell something. Rowan Williams, the ex-Archbishop of Canterbury, has written something very interesting in criticizing non-realists, despite the fact that he has a kind of sympathy with them. So, Rowan Williams is a good point of reference in contemporary Christian theology. Okay, let's get back to realism, because realism is the default position. We usually are realists. We usually are. Even atheists or theists, even if atheists, we think that religious language is supposed to refer to something out there, whether or not there is something out there, that's another issue. So we are usually realists. Okay, let me add two. Okay, no. Non-realism is a very, very interesting debate. But if you are interested in Simone Weil, if you come from a French background, Simone Weil, marvelous. Simone Weil, Soren Kierkegaard. Simone Weil is interpreted non-realistically by Desert Phillips exactly in this book, The Concept of Prayer. He quotes, but by the way, back in 1965, no one knew Simone Weil. No, she's very famous in contemporary context of philosophy and theology. But back in 1960, one of the first who discovered Simone Weil was Desert Phillips. And of course, Kierkegaard. Also, he quoted Kierkegaard, but Kierkegaard was very famous even back in 1960s. Okay, realist arguments. There is a debate in Oxford a couple of years ago between Richard Dawkins and Rowan Williams. You can watch it on YouTube. Between Richard Dawkins and Rowan Williams. Maybe 2012 or so. But what is interesting about that debate is not Richard Dawkins, which is not interesting at all. Rowan Williams, very interesting, marvelous. The moderator of that debate, if you ask me, I think is as prominent as, Richard Dawkins, but Rowan Williams is maybe more prominent or as prominent as the Rowan Williams. Do we have access to internet here? I don't have time, but you know, that's a very interesting point. Let me show it to you. YouTube, okay. That is Antoine Kenny. That's Antoine Kenny. Antoine Kenny. I mean, a philosopher and historian of philosophy. Marvelous. He has a book called Agnostic Essays. Marvelous. He used to be a priest, known as an agnostic philosopher. By the way, Richard Dawkins mocked him in this discussion, because Antoine Kenny asked him a very to-the-point question. And Richard Dawkins, I think, he even didn't get the point of the question raised by Antoine Kenny. So, getting back to our discussion, yeah, but let me see if I can find the point that Antoine, that mocking point. Okay, so you can check it later. How can I get back to... Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. In his marvelous book, The God of Philosopher, I come from Iran. So 1979, for us Iranian, means a lot. His Iranian history changed. 1979 is the Iranian Revolution time. At that time, when we were doing revolution, I mean, not me and my fathers, Antoine Kenny published this book, The God of Philosophers. Marvelous. No, a classic book. In which he has a kind of paragraph, which is classics now. And that is this. I actually summarize it. It's more than that. You can check it. An agnostic praying to a God. By the way, he himself is agnostic, as I said. He used to be a priest. To a God is surely no more unreasonable than the act of a man adrift in the ocean, trapped in a cave or stranded on a mountainside, like the great 2011 movie or something like that, who cries for help though he may never be heard, or fires a signal which may never be seen. So there is an analogy, it's a kind of analogical reasoning. You're trapped somewhere and you don't know whether is someone around or not. In such a situation, crying for help, not only reasonable, probably you have to do it. You have to do it. That's why at the beginning said that there are some philosophers building on Antoine Kenny's analogy, saying that no, it's not reasonable only, because all Antoine Kenny is claiming is that it's reasonable. Atheistic prayer or agnostic in his terminology is reasonable. They said no, it's obligatory. You have to do it. But okay, let's put more extreme or more maximal version of the argument aside, the minimal version is that at least it's reasonable. That's the claim. And that's the argument. It's the analogical argument. So an atheist person is not different from a person trapped in a mountainside crying for help. There might be no one, you know? The great movie, Do Something. do something. I think it's completely reasonable to do that. Do something. By the way, if you have watched that 2011 Grey, there is after credit scene. Do not miss it. Which is key to understanding what happened to the guy. Well, yeah, that after credit scene, do not miss that as well. So do something. So, conclusion. My claim was, and it still is, unless you convince me otherwise, in Q&A, that atheists can pray to God, but two conditions. One, when they are not 100% sure that God does not exist. If you're an atheist and you 100% think that God does not exist, pray would be futile. And by the way, even that Richard Dawkins said, I'm not 100% sure that God doesn't exist. I mean, Russell was agnostic. I mean, this is condition number one. But that's not enough. The second condition, you still might think that God might be out there or might not. But God is not a live option for you. What does live option mean? I took it from William James, a famous Harvard philosopher. What is live option? If you love someone, your beloved is not just someone else, just like someone else. Your beloved is a live option for you. But if you like someone, nice guy, but you do not love him or her, so he or she is a dead option for you, just like someone else. So condition number one, you are not 100% sure that God does not exist. Condition number two, the existence of God is not a dead option for you. Going back to Grey 2011 movie, the guy in another scene, in a dialect, said, I am atheist. But I wish I could have faith. Which means God is not a dead option for the guy. That's why he, at that existential moment of his life, when he's left alone, both literally and figuratively, said, do something. Okay, and that's the summary, which is already announced in the poster. So thank you very much for your invitation. Thank you. Yeah, sure.
Percentage of faith in theism or whatever. Like, do you subscribe to that as faith in theism as a percentage of a spectrum or a matter of degree, or do you subscribe to, like, you are either theist or atheist, like a true-false kind of state?
For an atheistic prayer, the possibility of atheism?
For theism, faith in theism itself, like,
mm-hmm.
Do you subscribe to, like, I believe in some type of theist?
Me, myself?
No, like, what position do you subscribe to?
Yeah, I mean, I'll explain my position in a minute, but before that, my discussion didn't suppose the truth of theism or atheism. My discussion was neutral. The discussion of the atheistic, the possibility of atheistic prayer. This is point number one. So whether God exists or not, and whether we can plausibly believe in the existence or non-existence of God are other issues. But the issue here was that whether God exists or not, whether believing in God is plausible or not, atheistic prayer is possible. That's why I know that it was not your question. But just to make it clear, that my discussion in terms of the truth or untruth of theism, atheism was neutral. But do I believe in God or not? Or does my discussion presuppose theism, the truth of theism? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. If I...
It wasn't even quite my question, because obviously because it kind of depends on what the talk was about, because I'm asking because if you have like 1% faith in God, for example,
okay,
would you classify that as theism or atheism, for example?
Okay, a very good question. Regardless of whether even 1% of possibility of theism or atheism is considered theistic or atheistic, even in that 1%, if the existence of God is a live option for that person, then atheistic is possible. And I think it is atheistic. You know why? Okay, 51-49. 51% think God doesn't exist, atheistic. 49% think that God might exist. So, 50-50 agnosticism. Okay. 51 God doesn't exist, atheism. 51 God exists, theism. But my point is that either way, if God is a live option, one can pray. Only if you think 100% God doesn't exist, or even 49% God might exist, but I don't care, that's not my option, then one cannot pray. But by the way, I'll presuppose realism in what I've just said, because I said belief is important, which is a realistic position in philosophy of religion. If you ask a non-realist, he or she would come up with a totally different answer. They say that, no, I mean, that percentage is not important. Your form of life. But I'm not non-realist in philosophy of religion. But if you ask Don Cupid, he's still alive, maybe in Cambridge, he would come up with a totally different answer. Please, yeah. You were about to ask a question. Is it solved, meanwhile? Uh-huh.
So at the end of it, you took from the concept of logical possibility and ethical permissibility, you whittled out authenticity.
Sure.
And I was wondering where that came from.
It comes from existential philosophy. That's why I add existential. Okay. Authentic life is a life in which one is not hypocrite. One is free from bad faith, using a phrase that Jean-Paul Sartre used. So authentic life is a life in which one is true to oneself. That is authentic. It's not completely an ethical terminology. It's more existential, but at least has an ethical aspect to it. So if you think that, I'm an atheist, but I pray. Why? To keep up the faces? No, that's not authentic. Probably not even ethical. But definitely not authentic. So that was not our concern, because that's possible. I mean, there are a lot of people doing that. So authentic prayer to God. That you pray to God, I'm an atheist, let's suppose. I pray to God, and I want to remain true to myself, to my atheistic self. That was our question, okay? Okay.
Is the person not just atheist? Because if you just believe that the rules of the religion, the structure of the religion, the kind of path it like provides you to live your life, is what is important in religion and the routine and these kind of things. But there is no belief in the existence of God on which theism is based, then I'm not just an atheist.
Okay. Good question, and the answer would be that even the theism, atheism, division is based on realism. So from non-realist perspective, even that division is just outdated. Yeah, I mean, as that's why I said that realism is by default position, even for atheist, even for theist, for all. Realism is default position. But you know, in especially in 20th century, and there are some, I mean, medieval mystical trends of non-realism, but especially in 20th century, there are a number of philosophers that who cast a lot of doubt on realism. Said, okay, language has nothing to do with doctrine, with how you believe. It's about how you feel, how you behave, what is your form of life. It's all about it. It comes down to it. That is non-realistic position. I have to confess, it's a very interesting position. And by the way, that also opens another gate of dialogue between religious and the so-called religious and the so-called non-religious. But I'm not sure, but I think non-realism has its own difficulties, philosophical difficulties. Yeah, so it's a matter of debate, could be a matter of debate. Yeah, please.
So my question is related to the clipping shows. Wouldn't it be individuals calling
Yeah.
In a time where he's lost everything, he's in desperation, right? My question is, what would be your moral comment on that? Is it morally right to call God only when you're in that desperate situation? Either from a philosophical perspective or a perspective of God.
Very interesting question. Let me answer it with a Quranic quotation. أَمَّا يُلْجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءُ. مُضْطَر in Arabic means desperate. Is there someone... Okay, this is the very rough translation. Is there someone out there giving answer to a desperate calling on God? Okay, it has been translated in a number of ways. The one that I like it is that petition and prayer, ritual prayer is different. Petition and prayer is only for a desperate person. Only for desperate. I mean, or put it another way, the more authentic way of petition and prayer is for a desperate. If everything is okay, why are you taking God's time? Everything is okay. But when you are desperate, that's why the Quranic verse, أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَى. Is there someone out there to answer to a desperate person calling on God? وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءُ. To clear the bad things that is happening to him or her. So yes, I think that is the moment of prayer. The desperation is the moment of prayer. If, put it another way, if we were God, we wouldn't need petitionary prayer. God or God, they do not need petitionary prayer. So that's the moment in which we think that we are left alone. Do something. Do something. Wolves are about to tear me apart. Do something. That's the moment of petitionary prayer, I think. Okay. Exactly. Yes, but the problem with the Quran is, the Quran doesn't say that when you're desperate you pray it's bad. The Quran says that okay, when you're desperate, when you are in a bad condition and you pray, then when the atrocities is lifted off, you tend to forget God. That is the thing. That is the point of criticism in the Quran. Not saying that you are desperate, don't pray. But that is the moment of pray. I don't think that the Quran is saying that. No, it says that okay, the moment is lifted up, you're back to the normal. Don't forget God. That's the point. Yeah.
So, do you think it's possible to make a claim that pray is a necessity for it's necessary for the possibility of atheist prayer because...
What is necessary?
For there to be a possibility for atheists to pray. Because how could like Camp A or Group A who have been given grace from God or whatever and who believe in God, and Camp B who is atheist, who does not have any reason to believe in God, but I'm saying, like, how could a bridge between theism and atheism be possible without prayer? Because I don't see how, like, atheists could ever come over to Camp A by not having the theological necessity of prayer. You see?
Yeah.
You kind of see what I mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. There is a philosopher who has written an article, very interesting one, related to our discussions. The title is roughly this, I can look it up, but roughly based on my memory is this: why atheists should pray God to stop being atheist. Yeah, I mean, but that's the maximal claim. As I said, that's the maximal claim. That's too much to claim. My claim is very minimal. But if you accept that minimal claim and then based on that, based on Anthony Kenny quotation back in 19, because Anthony Kenny is the classical example. So all discussion about ethics and prayer is built on that quotation back in 1979. We were doing revolution back in Iran. So, but one might say, okay, I'm atheist and I do not see God's evidence. Ask for it. And please ask for it. There might be evidence awaiting to be revealed to you, but you have to ask for it. Yeah, I mean, but you ask, okay, you could ask me, do you think that the atheists are obliged to pray to God? I'm not sure. That minimal claim that I presented at that Safa, I mean, back in 2 months' time, and my title was Can and Should Atheists, and then I dropped should because I'm not sure, but can, I'm totally sure. I think there is no problem whatsoever philosophically. And practically, it's useful. It's useful. Meaningful for atheists, including agnostics. And theists in their atheistic moment or periods of their time to pray. God, I don't know whether you are outside or not. But if you are, please help me. What is that quotation from New Testament? Help on my unbelief? Yeah, something like that. Help my unbelief. God, help my unbelief. It's a quotation from New Testament, which I like it. When I didn't bring it in because I didn't want to make my discussion exegetical. Otherwise, there are a lot of good quotation from mystical Islam, from the mystical Christianity, mystical Judaism in favor of atheistic prayer. But that my discussion was limited only to philosophical. Yeah.
And actually, two of my questions were actually linked together because
okay.
wouldn't it be possible to argue that since theism, atheism is like a specter or like a percentage thing, right?
Sure.
And there's actually not possible to have 0% atheism because you can't ever be certain that there's a lack of theism or theists. Like, you can't ever be 0%, for example, right? And shouldn't then, since the prominent atheist, whatever, he has still 1%, right? Of theism, right?
Sure. Then live option factor.
Yeah, but
the second factor.
Shouldn't he be obliged to pray to God even though he has 1%? Because he will always, even though he doesn't believe he has 1%, he should always try to be merited to God's favor, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay, a very good point. First thing first, there are some who would say that we are sure that God doesn't exist. There are. Okay, this is point number one. We might take them to be naive, Okay, but there are. But by, on the other one, there are some who 100% sure that God exists. So put, I mean, is that naivete? Well, it's a matter of debate. But, okay, let's confine our discussion to those who are not certain from both sides. Are they obliged to pray to God? That's a maximal claim. Still, I'm not sure about the obligatory, about obligation, I'm not sure. But about desirability and possibility, if I say 100%, I'm sure you may take me to be naive as well. Well, it's a matter of debate, but I have a certain degree of certainty that desirability and the possibility of atheistic prayer can be defended. Please.
Just to expand on that question, I can't remember what this group of people are called, but people who would deny God's existence, even if there was like 100% proof that he existed, I think that the term for that philosophy.
Term for?
Like people who, I can't remember what it is, but I know it's like a Greek or Latin term, that even if God existed and there was 100% proof, they would still...
Yes, yes. Okay, no. Good point. Because for them, God is not a live option. Why? Because even if you try to prove them, even if they are convinced that God exists, they are not ready to confess that God exists. Then God is not a live option. That's why I added the second factor. The second factor is very important. Because I come from a realistic camp of philosophy of religion, I should add the first, I mean, the percentage factor, or the first percentage condition. But there is also an existential condition that should be added, and that is live option. God is not a live option for a person who is kind of resisting to God. But, again, from the non-realistic perspective, Desert Phillips has a quotation in some another book of him saying that even those who have a resistance against God, they are involved in religious perspective, in religious form of life. Yes, from non-realistic perspective, it could be. I'm coming from a realistic perspective. For me, if someone is systematically and thoroughly resisting to God, not in one moment or a short period, no, I'm talking about the long period, then God is not a live option for him or her. Then, okay, let me put it this way. It's a very good point. Satan, does he believe in God 100%? Yes. Yes. But God is a live option for him? No. By the way, even Satan is interpreted both realistic and non-realistic way in the Abrahamic religion, in all three faiths. I'm talking about realistic understanding, because in non-realistically, Satan, and by the way, one can be generally realistic in his philosophy, but in one point could be non-realistic. Okay? So, if you are realistic about Satan, saying that there is something, I don't know whatever it is, there is a something out there called Satan, 100% believing God. Why? Because he asked God for time. Give me time till the last day, till the day of judgment, so that I can deceive people. If you ask someone for help, for time, it means you have presupposed that God exists and God has a power. So Satan is a God believer, but only doctrinally, not existentially. That's why I've added the second condition. In order to be a believer from a realist perspective, at least 551%, at least. Okay. One should believe in God, or okay, one should be either agnostic, 50-50, I think is acceptable. I mean, agnostic religious believer is possible, I think. Either 50-50 or 51 and more, this is the doctrinal condition. But more importantly, is existential condition. God is a life option for you. Then prayer is possible. That's what I think. That's what I think. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.